So they may have found a piece of that plane. We'll have an update on Malaysia Airlines. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. As you've been hearing, a piece of an aircraft has washed up on Réunion in the Indian Ocean, and experts believe it's a piece of wing from a Boeing 777. Authorities say it's still too early to say if this is a piece of Malaysia Flight 370, which disappeared from the skies in March 2014. Officials say they're working quickly to help give families more information, families of those who were on that flight. Malaysia Airlines also lost a second aircraft over Ukraine 4 months later. That airline barely survived as a going concern. BBC's Philip Hampshire in London has been following the company. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David.
At this juncture, as investigators fly out to Réunion to ascertain if this is, in fact, a part of the Malaysian Airlines flight, what can you tell me about the status of the company?
Well, the company is currently undergoing a restructuring. Eventually, there was a political row in Malaysia, and it got taken into something rather akin to Chapter 11 protection from creditors in the United States. They had to pass a special piece of legislation in Parliament over in Malaysia, and then it got bought out by the government's investment arm.
So essentially, it was, in a sense, nationalized by the Malaysian government.
It's a little bit more complicated than that because supposedly the investment division of the Malaysian government is somewhat arm's length, but in practice you would regard it a little bit more in that way from an American view of regarding the finances. The hope is that it's going to come back to the marketplace in some form in September as it gets converted into a new business.
So that I clearly understand, is it a going concern now? Can you buy tickets for Malaysia Airlines?
You can buy tickets to fly on the Malaysia Airlines planes. There have been, obviously, a big decline, though, in passenger confidence and people who wish to get on board those planes.
BBC business reporter Philip Hampshire in London, thank you for this.
You're welcome, David.
50 years ago today, President Lyndon Johnson signed legislation establishing the safety net insurance programs Medicaid for poor Americans and Medicare for folks 65 and older. Americans facing the end of life increasingly make use of the Medicare hospice benefit. Now, in theory, this is a cost saver. Hospice patients get regular visits from care providers but avoid costly medical interventions. But it's not entirely clear that hospice is saving Medicare money. Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports.
End-of-life care accounts for a big chunk of Medicare spending, about 25%.
This is actually a statistic that has been remarkably stable from year to year. It hasn't changed very much.
That's Tricia Newman, director of the Medicare Policy Program at the Kaiser Family Foundation. She says a small share of Medicare dollars go to hospice, but spending's on the rise. Newman says of all the Medicare beneficiaries who died in 2013, half used hospice services.
And that is a rate that has doubled since the year 2000.
Hospice involves less medical care, but the savings from that are unclear. So says Mike Plotsky, a health economist with Apt Associates. He studied hospice use among nursing home residents and found those folks actually had higher end-of-life costs because of lengthy hospice care.
These findings give some pause about whether or not hospice is going to save Medicare money or not.
Plotsky says, given the rapid expansion of the hospice care industry, the costs warrant further study. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
We're so often told that innovation and creativity is a young person's game. Albert Einstein's great insights occurred as a young man, we're told. But experts say this premise is bunk, and that may open up an opportunity for both the elderly and artists looking for new sources of income. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell has been considering and joins us from St. Paul. Good morning, Chris.
How are you doing, David?
Good. Chris, you're seeing a shift in how creativity among older people is nurtured?
I think so. I mean, David, more and more artists were genuinely creative in their elder years. And then it turns out that more and more people are creative in their elder years. And the exciting thing that's happening and the realization that I've come to is that there's a growing business for professional artists to nurture and draw out and encourage the creativity of an aging population.
So in other words, it's a difference between you put up a sign that says help wanted gerontologist and put up a sign that says help wanted creativity specialist or artist who wants work.
Absolutely. So Tim Carpenter, he's a founder of Engage in Southern California, and he builds affordable low-income retirement communities. And these are, you know, for low-income seniors, but they're built around arts and creativity. So you're taking classes from a professional dancer, a professional musician, and you're going to present it to the people in your community. And so what I'm noticing more and more is, you know, a lot of professional artists, they do some things with schools, and now what they're doing is they're playing in senior centers, adult communities, retirement communities. And again, it's all being participatory. So the artist gets an income. And at the same time, they have a new audience. And this audience is not sitting there and watching them do it. This audience is participating in the craft.
And Chris, sometimes you hear talk about, I don't know, health benefits to this kind of engagement, to this kind of creativity.
There are some genuine health benefits because seniors are using their brains. They're tapping into their experiences. They're learning new skills. This is one of my favorite factoids that's out there right now. In Britain, a doctor can prescribe that one of their elderly patients take a painting class, take a dance class, take some sort of art class. And the NHS, the British National Health Service, will pay the bill.
Marketplace's chief economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, David.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.